At the beginning, it was more that flatness. There was a spell probably 6 months after I saw the doctor where I gained about 30 pounds in less than 3 months. I was, you know, exercising the same, I was eating the same. Everything else was pretty typical. And I thought, yeah, this isn't how this is supposed to go. It's just hormones, right? You're a woman, you're over 35. So
it
can happen. Maybe set your standards a little lower.
So in terms of, I know a lot of my listeners and people in my community are, some of their goals are to lose weight. And many of them, for example, like they've tried everything. They've been on all these diets and they maybe did CrossFit and they feel like they're doing everything well and they're eating fairly clean, but they just can't lose any weight. So what would you say to someone like that that comes into your practice?
Hi there, I'm Holly Braddock, registered nutritionist. Listen up, all you mamas, hustlers, and go-getters. You've ignored your needs for so long, and now your body is crying for help. It's time to get your confidence and your life back. Sit back while I break down the latest in gut and metabolism research into easy-to-digest, actionable strategies that move the needle on your health. It's not all in your head, and it's never too late to heal. Discover the truth about your gut, hormones, and metabolism, and the fact that it's all connected. It's time to rise up and take control of your health, because you deserve it. Welcome to the Mindful Vitality Podcast.
So today we have Melanie Thomas joining us. Melanie is a colleague of mine at Berger and a fellow nutritionist with a passion for thyroid health. Thanks for joining me, Melanie.
Oh, thanks for the invite.
Yeah, so before we kind of dive in and hear about your health journey, do you want to tell us a bit about your nutrition practice?
The practice itself, I have my lovely home base, I call it, at Verger, and most people will see me there. I do have a couple of other satellite practices as well. Primarily, people had come to see me for food sensitivity and nutritional evaluations, checking in on gut health when things just weren't right there. In the last, I would say, 5 years or so, it's branched a little more into the autoimmune aspect and some of the chronic things I'll see more of. When people are sick and tired of being not optimal and not feeling like themselves, so offering them some hope.
Yes, definitely. I think a lot of people come in through our doors and are just kind of at their end of their rope, and they've been to all the doctors and specialists and everyone tells them they're fine and their blood values are fine, which we will get into today.
But we will.
Yeah, clearly something is off because they were not feeling well. So how did you end up finding out that you had a thyroid condition?
I went to see my doctor because I just felt flat. Like my life was, still is, pretty good. I have a lot of wonderful things in my life and I had no, I call it my sparkle, like it was just gone. And the doctor said, you know, you're fine, maybe think about an antidepressant, without taking any blood work or anything like that. And I pleaded for a little bit more information and get some blood work. He humored me and ran the TSH and declared that I was fine, and off I went. We'll talk more about it. The numbers were normal, but they were not fine. Yeah.
So let's dive into testing a little bit then. Like, so doctors typically do the TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. Maybe you can kind of give us a brief overview of what each of the tests are. And
yeah, TSH is the one the doctors like to look at. And I like to remind people that TSH is not a thyroid hormone. It's thyroid stimulating hormone. It's a brain hormone. And it can be normal for a long time while your levels continue to fall of your active hormones. Naturopathic care, or if you're using a functional doctor or functional practitioner, they'll look a little bit deeper and look at usually free T3, which is the active hormone that fits into receptors in almost every cell in the body, has a receptor for that free T3 hormone. And the free T4. And free is important because if it's bound, it can't do anything.
Right.
So looking at the free T4, functionally, we talk about those levels. The free T4, we'd like to see in the top half of the range, whatever the range the lab gives you, and free T3 in the top quarter of the range. And that's a really tough thing to do because a lot of doctors want to use only T4 therapy. And
okay.
30 to 40% of people are really bad at converting it from that T4 to the T3.
Mm-hmm. So T4 is Synthroid then?
Usually, yeah, the Synthroid. Yeah. Yeah. And then looking at antibodies, most, and that's like 95% of hypothyroidism isn't a thyroid issue. It's an autoimmune issue.
Hmm.
And dealing with that with just hormone replacement and not addressing the underlying autoimmune keeps people feeling awful for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And so what issues would contribute to them developing that autoimmune condition?
We need that genetic predisposition is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Leaky gut typically is another contributing factor, whether that's from food sensitivities, from stress, from yeast overgrowth, or other parasitic or bacterial overgrowth issues. And then some kind of a stress or a trauma. And it doesn't even have to be something bad. Like we look at stress on the body, the big three times for people to come up with that thyroid dysfunction is typically puberty, pregnancy, and perimenopause.
Okay.
So those big hormonal
mm-hmm.
shifts really are a trigger. And then stress, like weddings are stressful. That can trigger an autoimmune response. It's mm-hmm. not that it's a bad thing, but it's any kind of stress.
Okay.
And then, yeah, we've got a whole host of things that come from that.
So I guess when you work with clients, you're looking at more of those root causes that could be triggering the inflammation that would contribute to them developing an autoimmune condition, right?
Yeah, if we're dealing with the triggers, then we're lowering inflammation and we're lowering the attack on the thyroid. And thyroid tissue has been known to regenerate. I have one client in my practice that had half of her thyroid removed in mm-hmm. a surgery about 10 years ago. It has since grown back, and she was never told that that was a possibility. Some doctors will tell you that, you know, if you have your thyroid removed, then you won't have thyroid issues. They just give you the Synthroid and you're good to go, but it doesn't deal with the underlying autoimmune. So
right.
Your body's going to continue to attack tissues.
Mm. And then once you have one autoimmune condition, then you're more set up to develop another one, right?
Absolutely. It's that cascade.
Oh dear. So tell me how the antibodies work. And you did mention before that you can have autoimmune thyroid issues without elevated antibodies.
That's a fun one for people, because even if they do convince the doctor to run the extensive tests that we like to see functionally and look at TPO and anti-thyroglobulin antibodies, if they are below the threshold, the doctor declares that they don't have an autoimmune issue, but sometimes your immune system is really not functioning well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have that autoimmune attack that's still below the threshold, and you can see that in an ultrasound. We'd like to rule it out. You can't rule out autoimmune disease with a negative antibody. You can only rule it in.
Okay.
So
they didn't send you to any like specialists or anything like that? Just the one blood test, really?
I did get a referral to an endocrinologist, so I managed to get that done. I had sought some naturopathic care because the wait time was about 15 months to see the endocrinologist.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, okay, that seems like a long time. There's a lot of things I can do in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
She ran a couple of other tests that the doctor hadn't run. So he did just the TSH, which was just above 3. When I went to the endocrinologist, she humored me and she ran the free T3 and the free T4, both of which were normal, but on the low end.
Right.
And wasn't interested in looking at antibodies, wasn't interested in looking at reverse T3. I asked her for a second opinion, and she sent my information off to another endocrinologist who refused to see me on the basis of my unremarkable lab work. There's nothing wrong with you. It's unremarkable. we'll see you in, you know, 10 years when you're completely off the rails.
Wow.
I don't think we touched on the reverse T3 piece. Mm-hmm. And that's one that I would often recommend that people have tested as well. The reverse T3 is under that umbrella of thyroid hormones. So if it's high, it can lower the TSH. There are a lot of things that can increase conversion to that reverse T3, and the stress and trauma is a big one. We'll see high reverse T3 and low active T3 after, you know, car accidents or surgery or things like that. It's protective. Okay. You don't want to be having a ramped up metabolism when you're trying to recover from that kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, if you're in chronic stress, because we live in 2020, knowing that reverse T3 could be elevated, and then we want to get at the root of why, right? Is it inflammation? Is it poor conversion in the liver? Is it a lack of certain nutrients like zinc or vitamin A?
Mm-hmm.
So all
I guess with that emotional trauma piece, that's where, you know, taking that whole person approach and encouraging people to seek support, whether it's counseling or with a loved one or whatever kind of mental health and emotional support they can get as part of that healing journey, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Takes a village is true. We all need supports, and we're all feeling more and more isolated. So
if you're really struggling with your weight and, you know, your doctor has told you you're normal, or maybe you haven't had any thyroid testing at all, to definitely get that tested. See what your doctor will do first, obviously, in terms of cost, and then whatever they won't do, you can see a functional practitioner, someone like Melanie or Dr. Spark, and any naturopath is able to order those thyroid blood tests that we discussed today. And yeah, really get to the root of what's going on, because I feel like if your thyroid is off and you're not addressing that, it's going to be really hard to make any progress with your weight.
And Dr. Kristen, and I think you and I both have done the saliva testing as well, mm-hmm. right? Like looking at that cortisol curve, maybe your thyroid's struggling because it's trying to do the work of your adrenals as well.
So right.
Have a look at everything, your whole big puzzle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're doing everything right and you're not getting some results, there's probably a reason for that.
So. Yeah. Are there certain risk factors that people should be aware of for thyroid conditions?
The risk factors, genetics is a big one. Being aware that if you have an autoimmune condition, so you have asthma or eczema or one of the other 100 things, that does up your risk. If you have gut issues, that will up your risk. Heavy metals and exposure to heavy metals, so people that work industrial areas and things like that.
Okay.
Radiation. Yep. What else was on my list of things? Fluoride exposure can be a trigger and a risk factor. Bromine, chlorine, because all of those will displace that iodine molecule.
Okay.
They're in that same kind of place in the periodic table.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Iodized salt or sea salt?
I'm a sea salt girl. Yeah. I get my iodine typically from sea vegetables and seafood as opposed to iodized salt. It's funny, when I went to the endocrinologist, that was one of the things that I had asked about, was checking iodine before I did any iodine supplementation. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you don't have to worry about iodine. People get plenty of iodine from the iodized salt. I'm like, hi, did I mention I'm a nutritionist?
Yeah.
Don't do iodized salt. Himalayan salt, Celtic salt. Yep.
And it's because, well, I know that there's sugar in table salt, right? But also there's no mineral content, right? Whereas there is in sea salt.
The broad mineral content is what I like in the sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big proponent of adding that to your water as well, right? It helps the body use the water. Our bodies don't use H2O on its own.
Okay.
They need minerals to absorb it, so.
Yes, salt is one of those necessary electrolytes.
It is.
The most common question I get about my program and working with me in general is, do I have to cut out carbs and sugar? Which makes me laugh because I feel you. I am a self-professed chocoholic. I love carbs too, so I can't be a hypocrite. The good news is, in the program, you can still eat carbs, you can still have your treats. The program is designed for you to learn how to make a healthy, balanced meal, but also allow yourself indulgences. We're actually going to be working on your mindset so that you can eat a treat without beating yourself up. You're also going to understand that one treat is not going to make you gain 5 pounds, because that's not how your metabolism works. You're going to learn to see food as just food. It's not good or bad. We have to deprogram that diet industry thinking from your brain, because when we see certain foods as bad and then you eat it, then you see yourself as bad for eating it, and you go into a downward spiral of self-hatred. And then when you feel crappy by beating yourself up, what do to feel better? You eat more.
Maybe you can talk a bit about the connection between like burnout, aka adrenal fatigue, there's many terms for it, I guess, and how many people with that end up with a thyroid condition, why they're so closely connected.
It's huge, huge, huge connection to the adrenals. And part of it has to do with the digestive piece. So if we're looking at low thyroid function, we're looking at low digestion, low stomach acid, low insulin response, low fat digestion, all of the above. But the insulin response is the big one that sucks the adrenals downhill, because your body is slow to supply insulin when there is glucose in the blood. So then it sends that signal to the adrenals to say, hey, we need more sugar, but it's already there. And then they just stop communicating. That pattern of the hypoglycemia, really, you get the normal blood sugar levels on a test, but you're having hypoglycemia symptoms. And it's that adrenal piece, that elevated cortisol and the elevated hormones.
Okay. And does sleep play a role in all of this?
We see the sleep and insomnia as a symptom a lot of the time. I have a document that I'll often share with thyroid clients when they're having a hard time with doctors that lists about 300 symptoms of thyroid dysfunction. And they're like, okay, like it affects everything. So the sleep is a big one, and the cortisol definitely plays a role in that. I know you talk about that a lot when your cortisol is all turned inside out and it's high at bedtime and low, so you can't drag yourself out of bed in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think many of us are dealing with cortisol dysregulation this year.
Dysregulation. Yeah. And I'll often tell people, like, we'll start at the beginning, you know, with the gut stuff and balancing the microbes in the gut. A lot of it is blood sugar balance. Like, you can't have hormone balance without blood sugar balance.
Right. And maybe you can explain a little bit more on the connection between like the sex hormones and thyroid.
Because they're endocrine, right? And like that whole endocrine system gets bogged down. The big one when we're talking about digestion is the liver. If you tend to be constipated with hypothyroid issues, things, the transit time is slow, so you have more reabsorption of excess estrogens and a really poor ability to eliminate those estrogens. So then we get that increased hormonal disruption and the increased risk of estrogen-driven diseases as well.
Like breast
and
cancer.
And liver support. Breast cancer is the big one. Yeah. So we'll often do some liver support, molybdenum, and
And there's a lot of women that have been, I mean, you mentioned the three things were, what was it? Puberty.
Yeah, genetic. Oh, yes. Pregnancy and puberty and perimenopause.
Yeah. So it's always when the hormones are shifting, right? And so I think that role of women that have been on birth control, too, that has a huge impact on thyroid as well, correct?
There are a lot of medications that will lower the TSH falsely. Birth control or hormonal birth control and even hormone replacement therapies can lower that thyroid stimulating hormone. So your numbers may be completely out of whack, with the T4 and the T3, but the medications are holding that TSH below a threshold.
Okay.
So we want to always dig deeper if we're taking hormonal birth control or other therapies. The depo, even the hormonal IUD, even though it's low level, can still impact. Other things too, like prednisone is a big one. People with gut issues often will take rounds of prednisone with that, or any other autoimmune, and that will lower the TSH. So we, you know, we're measuring something that we're lowering. It seems silly.
Right. Yes, yeah. So you don't get an accurate measure if the drug is lowering it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same is true when you're on thyroid medication. A lot of people will take their thyroid medication, you know, before they're even out of bed in the morning, and then they go have a blood draw and their levels look normal. But they're normal because they just put it in, and the peak time for that is within about 3 hours. So a lot of the professionals that I follow, people like Isabella Wentz and Dr. Karazian, will talk about avoiding thyroid hormone within about 12 hours of blood work.
Okay.
So always fasting, always first thing in the morning, always take your medication after is their rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. When we're chronically stressed, our body is in the state of this chronic fight or flight response. And when your body is going through that, it's diverting all its resources to deal with the stressor and protect you from danger and kind of mobilize energy so that you can run from danger. So in doing so, it's diverting resources away from other things like your metabolism, which your thyroid is part of your metabolism. And it's diverting those resources in order to produce the hormones you need, like cortisol and adrenaline, to give you the energy to run away. So in general, your body is trying to conserve energy that it can use for this fight or flight response and not burn energy like burning fat and burning calories. So the reason this impacts your thyroid is a couple reasons why. So it's a survival mechanism, right? Your body is in this state where it doesn't have time to care about anything else, like balancing sex hormones or boosting your metabolism. It just wants to keep you alive. And the other aspect is you can't produce adequate levels of thyroid and sex hormones because your body is using all of these building blocks that are the same building blocks for stress hormones as well as sex and thyroid hormones. So it's using all of those building blocks to produce stress hormones. And then the stress response itself stimulates certain immune molecules called cytokines. These are inflammatory, stress-induced immune molecules, and they actually down-regulate thyroid hormone production. So it's reducing the production of thyroid hormones. And on top of that, when we produce thyroid hormones, we produce something called T4, which is the inactive version, and it needs to be converted to T3, which is the active version, in order to be used by the body. But when we're stressed, like we said, our body is busy working on these survival mechanisms, and it doesn't care about converting things like inactive T4 to active T3, because that has to do with metabolism, and it doesn't care about metabolism right now. It's just trying to keep you alive.
We're nutritionists, and I guess we should talk about the role of food here. So I guess there's two major aspects. One is like the nutrient deficiencies and how that plays a role, and then also food and inflammation. So specific diets and certain foods that can contribute to inflammation. So maybe you can tell us about that.
The big nutritional thing with autoimmune and especially autoimmune thyroid is to avoid gluten.
Mm-hmm.
The gluten, because molecularly it has that mimicry, if your body's reacting to the thyroid, it will often also react to gluten. So if you keep putting gluten in, you're going to have lots more autoimmune issues.
Okay.
So taking gluten out is usually number one. Sometimes dairy, often soy, will also react in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
When people come to see me, I never throw all of that at them at their first appointment.
Yeah.
Let's just start at the beginning with blood sugar balance. We'll work on lowering carbs across the board, more protein, more fat, more green vegetables, that kind of thing. And a lot of the time that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can talk about gluten gluten-free and go from there. I have a couple of clients that I've recommended the autoimmune protocol, which is a lot for people. I would not recommend it if you don't have to go there, and many people don't. Right. If you're having a hard time getting that autoimmune aspect under control, it's out there. It's doable, and it's not forever. It's a, you know, 30 to 90 days elimination and then reintroductions of most things, barring any response.
So what kind of foods are cut out with that diet?
With the autoimmune protocol, it eliminates all grains, not just gluten, all dairy, all soy, all beans and legumes, including coffee and chocolate. And nightshades are another one. So tomatoes and peppers and pepper-based spices like paprika, potatoes are a nightshade, nuts and seeds are off the table. So it's pretty basic and pared down.
Mm-hmm.
And then slow and methodical reintroduction. So we can see, hey, actually, now that I have this new baseline for how I feel, which is typically higher than ever, if they reintroduce something over the course of 2 or 3 days, do they see an increase in the symptoms that they'd left behind? If not, great, let's add another one.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, take it out and we can always try it again. It's a cycle.
Right.
Eggs are the other. I didn't mention eggs.
Yeah. So I guess not everyone has to go as strict as AIP. And if they were considering a diet like that, it's always best to work with a practitioner, right? Because it's very hard to do. And if you manage to do it, like, you could end up with a lot of nutrient deficiencies too, right?
Yeah. You want to work with someone that can help you get all of the nutrition in, even though you're taking all of these things out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Finding ways to get your proteins and some good fats without nuts and seeds.
Yeah, and some carbs without grains.
A little bit.
I guess the main goal then with that kind of protocol is to reduce the inflammation, like, in the gut, which translates to less inflammation in the whole body and less inflammation that would be affecting the thyroid, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
The gut piece is a good one too. I know that Dr. Kristen and I have both run that GI map test. I'll use the Biomeridian sometimes to look at the gut as well. There are a couple of microbes that are really commonly seen with the thyroid issues. The one we've chatted about, that Blastocystis hominis.
Yep.
And the other is a Yersinia enterocolitica, I believe is the pronunciation. But both of those are seen in much higher numbers in people with Hashimoto's, and oftentimes getting rid of that can really improve the symptoms overall, the gut health piece.
Okay. And so what kind of protocol would you do to get rid of those kind of microbes?
Oh, it's always fun. So I tend to use herbs, so things like wormwood or grapefruit seed or black walnut, berberine sometimes, depending upon what the person's tolerance is.
Mm-hmm.
We want some good probiotics, and we want to be careful with people because oftentimes when things are a mess, you can react really badly to certain probiotics. We want to add in gentle things that are not going to flare your symptoms.
Do you find that people with autoimmune conditions like that are more sensitive to certain changes with diet and supplements?
I would say on the whole, yes, more susceptible. We want to start low and slow. We want to do diet change and make sure we're addressing the lifestyle pieces as well, the stress and the sleep and a little bit of exercise and some mindfulness and breathing. And it's not just about what goes in your mouth. It's a lot about what goes on in your head too.
Yeah. For food intake, apparently there's a few things, like, for example, raw brassica veggies like cabbage and broccoli and all of that is kind of a no-go for thyroid condition people.
I definitely would recommend people cook them, even slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're doing once in a while, you're doing a coleslaw or something with a raw cabbage, it's not a big deal, but we don't want to be juicing cabbage every day or things, kale even.
Plus it's much easier to digest when it's
so much nicer just on that sad digestive system.
Yes, because odds are they probably have some kind of gut stuff going on if they have thyroid condition.
Well, that digestive piece, right? If you've got low stomach acid and you have poor fat absorption because the gallbladder tends to be sluggish, and then your liver's not working great because it's trying to do the thing that the gallbladder's doing, mm-hmm. coupled with transit time and all of that, yeah, digestion's not great most of the time. Mm. We'll sometimes do herbs there too, things like bitters or even apple cider vinegar or lemon water to help increase that absorption.
Okay.
Oh, I love my fire water.
What's in it again?
Fire cider.
Fire cider.
Yep. Yep, I made myself an AIP version because I wasn't doing peppers, and that's a huge one, the capsicum in there, the ferments. So I had my garlic and horseradish and ginger and onions and some citrus, and covered it all with apple cider vinegar and put it in a jar for a month in a dark place, and then strained out all the goodies. And
yeah
it's great because it's immune supportive. It's not stimulating. It's mm-hmm. just helping everything function and
support digestion, probably.
Supports and, digestion.
Circulation, which we can use when it's super cold out.
Yep, that horseradish in there. Oh,
yep.
Yep. Gets things going.
Sounds potent.
Yep. It is all kinds of potent.
Yeah. So do you have any basic kind of nutrition tips for someone if they've just found out that they have a thyroid condition?
If they just found out they had a thyroid condition, I would recommend pushing for celiac testing before making any other changes, because that's a big correlation. So I would not recommend going gluten-free until you rule that out with some solid blood work. Mm-hmm. And then the gluten-free piece is the huge one.
Okay. What about
and blood
certain
sugar
things?
Balancing?
Yeah. What about certain things that are high in nutrients you might need for your thyroid, like selenium, like Brazil nuts?
Well, Brazil nuts are a tricky one.
Yeah.
Because they're a nut and it'll inflame some people if you're tolerating nuts or seem to be Brazil nuts. I tend to do more fish mm-hmm. for people. So fish that's high in selenium, and that's most of the, fish that we're eating in North America is going to be fairly high in selenium. Okay. And sea snacks and nori, and this time of year, throwing some of the thicker, like the kombu and things, into a soup or a stock. You don't have to actually eat the seafood. You just have to put the seaweed in there and then let it soak the minerals.
So kombu is a type of seaweed?
Kombu is a type of seaweed. It's a big, thick one, so it's not going to disappear into your soup. Just the minerals come out, and the slimy green stuff you can take out.
Ah, okay.
That's the big complaint with people. You're like, oh, not seaweed. Just do it.
Just infuse it into the broth.
Infuse it.
Yeah.
We talk about trying to add some organ meats. Mm-hmm. And that's no one's favorite idea, but liver. I made a pate not that long ago and just froze it into little, 1 ounce jars, and then I can take it out and put it on my cucumbers or whatever. Getting some organ meats in there, they're nutrient dense, they're not expensive cuts of meat. Mm-hmm. So it can help the budget too. You don't have to eat steak if you're eating some liver. It's going to be cost effective, and
especially if you're a woman and you know you have low iron too.
Well, and it's iron, and it's all the copper and things that help to hold everything in balance. So
mm-hmm. I really love, I used to eat a lot of liverwurst growing up, but guaranteed it was like Schneider's or Pillar's or something that was full of nitrates and preservatives and not
and
super
milk.
Great.
I'm like, why do you have to put milk in all the commercial liverwurst?
Yeah, it's fillers. But so if you're going to do it, then either make your own probably, and maybe you can find, have you ever seen like at Goodness Me or one of the health food stores, like a natural version of? No.
Nothing that I would consider AIP friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be one I need to throw up on the blog, the disgusting liver recipe. I did it with apples and some caramelized onions and lots of green spices, and it's delicious.
That sounds actually pretty good. You might be converting me here. I kind of get grossed out at that, but
people don't like the idea, but they're not typically offended by the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I had one of my daughters was doing the autoimmune protocol, and some of the things we ate while she was early on in that were kind of phenomenal. They did heart, I think I have a heart
Oh, goodness.
Stir-fry steak in my freezer right now that I am going to try. And we had lamb testicles.
Oh, God.
Breaded in arrowroot, fried in coconut oil. They were delicious.
Like a meatball.
Chicken fingers, but so yeah. Delicious. Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm like, okay, whatever. And cheap. So if you're trying to, like, protein for a reasonable amount of money, yeah.
Do you just go to a local butcher and ask them for the...
Yep. Yeah. So, who helped them out with that? I think they were at a Mars on Lancaster here in Waterloo.
Okay.
They're out there.
What kind of response do you get when you recommend organ meat to your clients?
Organ meats tends to be the worst than, I have to give up coffee and then I tell them to eat organ meats. I'm like, come on. Like, yeah, well, remember when you said everything's too expensive?
Like, right.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. You just have to be willing to open your eyes a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's more of just like a, what's the word, like a cultural stigma maybe, because we never, North American culture anyways, don't really eat things like that.
And
maybe way back we did, but.
Well, and I think like my grandmother, she'll be 94 next month. And when she was growing up, they did much that you bought a cow and you ate everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're like, we're just used to seeing fillets in the grocery store. We've never seen a cow and all of its parts. So.
Yeah. Shrink-wrapped and perfect and clean. And
yeah.
Awesome. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
One of the things that I'll often suggest is food sensitivities. You know, you can be eating something super healthy, but if it's not working for you as an individual, it's going to increase inflammation, which is going to increase that cortisol and stress. And that cortisol is a fat storage hormone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're stressed, you're not burning.
And then it affects insulin too, right?
It absolutely does. And it impacts that conversion of T4 to T3 as well. So it's going to lower that conversion.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to manage the stress where we can. So individual diets, pay attention. You know, if you change something up, yeah. And weird things, like working with food sensitivities, I have seen some weird things come up, like rice. I'm like,
yeah.
Who has a sensitivity to rice?
<do. laughs>
That's, right?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I guess that's a real thing. Or coconut or maple.
Because then there's a cross reactivities too, right? So like, well, I'm allergic to maple trees, so like maple syrup can't really have, but with rice, that's part of the grass family. So like grass allergy, then.
Yep. It's the ragweed and chamomile that gets me.
Mm-hmm.
Like chamomile tea just ramps me up.
And stevia on that family too, which I just learned not long ago.
Which isn't everything. All those food families and
cross
reactivities.
But I think the most important thing would be, the thing that women should take away from this podcast is don't just keep cutting and cutting and cutting calories and carbs and stuff. There's something else going on.
Yeah. And I wouldn't give it too long either, right? Like, how long does it take for that change? That's 2 or 3 months of, you know, I'm eating well, I'm sleeping well, I'm getting some exercise and nothing's changing, or worse, I've seen I'm putting weight on.
Right.
Okay. No. Come, let's have a look at the big picture and see what's going on.
Exactly.
2 weeks out of every month, I was a mess. Between the mood swings, brain fog, pain, and fatigue, I could barely function. I just wish I knew then what I know now, that it's a hormone imbalance and that I can do something about it without resorting to birth control. See, my doctor humored me and tested my hormones and then told me everything's fine, but I didn't feel fine. When I took that same blood work to my naturopath, I found out that indeed everything was not fine. She helped me understand that my diet, stress levels, and lifestyle were contributing to my hormone imbalance and my mental health issues. She prescribed me simple diet and lifestyle changes that allowed me to take control of my hormones and get my life back. The more I learned about hormone imbalances, the more I realized just how common it was, and that for many women, it also contributes to weight gain. It's time to rise up and take control of your health. Don't let your doctor tell you that you're fine when you don't feel fine. You deserve to know the truth about your body. Find out what's really going on with your body and start feeling yourself again by building simple, healthy habits inside my new program, The Reset Solution. I'm still accepting founding members. I want you to get in at the ground level where the excitement is happening and grab the program for the lowest price it will ever be offered, but only until November 15th. And after that, the price will go up. I really look forward to seeing you in there. And if you're ready to join us and take control of your health and your life, head to the link in the show notes.
I was going to circle back to the supplements. What do you want to tell people about kind of self-prescribing, and if they think they have a thyroid condition, and just going out and going to the health food store and getting a thyroid supplement?
Oh, so many of them use iodine and use selenium. And those are great for building thyroid hormones. But selenium toxicity is a real thing, and it's really difficult to get rid of excess selenium. So testing first is really important. And iodine, it's a toughie. There's a lot of people that probably could use some iodine, but taking it in that form can flare and actually exacerbate an autoimmune condition, which is the opposite of what we want.
Yeah.
And I know you and I have chatted about immune boosting versus immune supporting, and a lot of the thyroid stuff is which helper cells are more active and modulating that response. So there are some herbs that we would use, things like astragalus and whatnot, that can help calm or modulate the immune system while still letting it function well for other things.
Whereas there are other adaptogens that might be in typical energy boosting products that may be more of a overstimulation of the immune system, which you don't want, right?
Yeah, you don't want to stimulate your immune system if you are already overstimulating it with that immune attack.
So things like echinacea or ginseng?
Some of those. And sometimes it's about the balance. Like if you're doing one or the other, if you're doing this lovely blend, sometimes we can get away with a little bit because it's balancing.
So
driving's tricky.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Do you want to share with us where we can find you online?
You can find me at melaniethomas.ca. There's links to my blog posts and booking at all of the clinics, and a little bit about me and where I came from and what my approach is. So,
awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Melanie. And you're also in my group, the Hormone Happiness Collective. So
I'm
looking forward to
kicking around in there too.
Yeah, connecting with you in there.
Nothing brings me more joy than empowering women with the truth about their body. I'm on a mission to change as many women's lives as possible, and I need your help. If you've enjoyed today's episode, share a screenshot and tag at mindful_vitality on Instagram, or leave a rating and review in your podcast app. When you share, you're helping other women just like you get empowered to take control of their health and their happiness. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes released bi-weekly on Mondays. Until next time, keep smiling and remember, carbs are not the enemy,